Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is 7 o'clock. It is Thursday. Happy New Year to you all. And that means it's time for some news. You are joined here today for the Radio Laurie News Show. It's nice to meet you again and nice to see you again. My name is Aaron Hagee. I'm the news director here at Radio Laurie, and I will be one of your hosts for today and for tonight. And my co-host, why don't you introduce yourself as well?
Hello out there. It's Garrison again.
Oh, we've got a lot of ahead of us for today. So just before we get into that, how are you feeling, Garrison? How are you feeling about getting right back into the beginning of the year?
I'm nervous. I feel like I'm going to get sick. So many people are sick all around me.
Yep. I'm starting to feel some of that. So I definitely get the feeling of sick. Oh, geez, do I ever.
And then overwhelmed because there's a lot of schoolwork going on. I actually did miss the first week of two of my courses. They were on Mondays and Wednesdays.
Yep.
So I was busy those days, and it's kind of a tricky way to start the semester.
Yeah, definitely going to be starting off on a bit of a slow foot, but hopefully we can get our momentum back. As always, before we get into our discussions today, please note that the opinions and views depicted on the Radio Laurie News Show do not necessarily reflect the views and values of either the Cord or Radio Laurie. They solely reflect the views of the individuals present on the show. If this is your first time listening in, maybe you're tuning in, maybe you just decided to start listening. We are a once weekly news show kind of podcasty deal. We are an amalgamation of the Cord's former podcast, as well as a new initiative by Radio Laurie. And every week, we discuss some of the interesting events, some of the interesting people, some of the exciting things that are happening in our community and at our school. So we got a lot to discuss today. We're talking about the Laurie Archives, Uber, but for music lessons, some youth advocacy against climate change, Eileen Mercier, the JHM Awards that recently took place at Nash, the Best of Laurie 2018, Understanding and Dealing with Seasonal Depression, and the Golden Hawks taking home the nine-time cheerleading championship. So good for them. So why don't we get into our first story, the Laurie that might have been. So the Laurie Archives, located in the basement of the library on Laurie's Waterloo campus, has been given some old blueprints of architectural designs of Laurie's campus from the 1960s, thanks to the family of Carl Christian. Now, Christian, who was responsible for designing many of the buildings on Laurie's current campus, such as the seminary, the dining hall, was a very popular architect in building many of the Lutheran churches around here, and was especially famous at Waterloo Lutheran University, which was Laurie's former name. Now, how did this happen? The family happened to connect with them through participation at the Doors Open event that was in September of 2017, and one of Christian's sons just happened to come on the campus, and they ended up going down the archives. They got talking about the work that his father had done at Laurie, and shortly after that, they'd wonder if they would have any interest in the blueprints. And I mean, obviously, you want to look into the past. It sounds pretty interesting, so they did it. The blueprints, you know, a little bit more different than how the campus looks today. They depict a number of scenarios for how the campus might have been constructed, including a football field on Bricker Avenue, which I found particularly interesting, as well as more allocated parking than the school currently has, which I think, Garrison, I don't know about yourself, but I think everybody would agree that would have been a good idea. Now, the designs, the current designs for how the seminary, the dining hall, Theater Auditorium, Fred Nichols Campus Center, and Alumni Hall were all Christian's designs. So if you like how they look, you can thank our architectural man. So even Laurie students in the time of Christian's designs may have seen some of the buildings that, you know, didn't exactly turn out like his designs. He had a lot of plans for buildings like the Theater Auditorium and McDonald House that were going to be connected by a three-story building. And there was actually a time when both were connected by a single-story pathway, which is very interesting. The team at the archives has cataloged the designs and gotten them stored away in the archives. They are very important to the Christian family, though, since Laurie was the only university that he worked on before he retired in the 1970s. Now, Garrison, have you had a chance to see the blueprints at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was the photographer for the story, so I got to look through a little bit, and I discussed with the Laurie Archives manager or the person who was running the office at the time that I was down there. It was very interesting.
Yeah.
I liked this building it was a theater auditorium connected to one of the residences, and I'm not sure which one it is, but mm-hmm. it had a glass connection between those two buildings, and so it just kind of allowed for more student traffic, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think what would have been really cool if Laurier went in that direction to have more covered walking and stuff so that students don't have to walk in the cold as much.
That would be great.
Especially on a day like today where it's a really cold wind.
Yeah. Real frigid outside. Oh, it would be nice to have some covered mm-hmm. walking. I don't know how I would feel about a football field on Bricker Avenue, though.
Mm-hmm. I think that it was wise not to, especially the way it looked. It was kind of crammed into that block.
Yeah.
And we're not a huge university yeah. campus. It's not like, well, it's a Canadian
yeah.
football, right? Mm. So I think it's better spent in other ways and probably yeah. for the larger majority of the student body.
For sure. Now, with that, was there two football fields then, or was it just moved in a different location?
I think it was just a plan in several locations. Okay. So I looked at several different blueprints, mm-hmm. and they had a football field somewhere. And then, yeah, I think it was just a plan for one.
That's really cool. I think the great thing about blueprint stuff like that and getting the chance to look at it, it really shows you how much effort really goes into architectural design. I mean, there's so many factors that people don't even consider when it comes to building. And the fact that he was responsible for so many is honestly a bit mind-boggling. It was great looking through those blueprints. So if you guys have a chance, check out the archives and check out the blueprints of seeing what possibly could have been. Now, we are going to be moving on to our next segment. Just in the interest of time, we aren't going to take a break today. So we're going to be moving on. Uber, but for music lessons, ? What am I talking about? A lot of university students know the struggle of not being able to access a lot of things they can at home. Car, you know, their own bathroom, you know, stuff for hobbies or things you enjoy. Sometimes you just don't have enough room in student housing. For Emily Feely, you know, she ran into the same problem. Her inability to access a piano while trying to become a piano teacher led her to create the Feely Piano School, which is a mobile music school that sends piano teachers to the students' houses instead, which I think is a great idea. So it's like, you know, like Uber, it brings the expert or the, you know, person selling the service to the consumer. But it's for people who want to learn piano, which is really cool. Makes it really convenient. I guess in that case, the only thing you need is a piano at your house, you know. But if you're interested in teaching, you know, check out the piano school. So she wanted to teach music lessons, but obviously she didn't have a piano available in her city because she was living in a university-style life, and, you know, that just wasn't practical. So she found that the best way, instead of creating a job that's flexible, you know, for your life is, you know, go to theirs, which obviously she worked very, very, very well for. So the school currently operates out of 7 different cities on Ontario and has instructors located in Alberta and Nova Scotia, people who can travel to different students in their city and give them piano lessons for low cost. So just like Uber, again, it makes it a little bit more affordable. They currently have 23 teachers. They're located throughout Ontario, and they also have teachers in Halifax and Edmonton. So it's already a very wide-reaching program, so good for her. So Waterloo is obviously the densest because 30% of the school is located in Waterloo. Though music is enjoyed and should be taught around the world, the owner of the company wants to educate Canadians in piano before taking her talents globally. So it makes sense. She wants to grow the company locally, make sure this is something that everything wants. And speaking personally, music has been a real big influence on Feely. She studied music at the University of Toronto. She's got a musical education history, and her father is a classical guitarist as well. The school itself is only teaching piano, but Feely believes that once she's mastered the art of booking and tracking her students, she wants to expand to other instruments. So that begs the question. If you could start an Uber-like school for something, where, you know, experts go to the customers instead of the other way around, what would you choose, Garrison?
I feel like I want to be careful with this because I think it's actually a really great business idea.
Yeah.
And it probably is actual business somewhere. I would go and teach people about computers,
ooh,
but like bare minimum. So yeah, probably yeah, older people that want to know a little bit more about their laptop, mm-hmm, a little bit more about their iPhone, whatever yeah, it is. I have maybe just above average skill level in computers and mm-hmm, personal computers. I think I would be a huge help for certain people.
For sure. Yeah, no, I believe Conestoga College does something akin to that, but that would be a really great thing to bring to people. I mean, most people, I think the majority of people, you might even say, have a computer in their homes, especially for older folk. It can be very difficult and very confusing and, you know, sometimes bothersome. So I'm sure that would be a wonderful little thing. It could be relatively cheap to do as well.
Did you have an idea as well?
You know, I would love a service like that for guitar lessons, because I think guitars are one of those things that a lot easier to get than a piano. So I think a lot more people would have them. Guitars, I think, are also guitar lessons. It's also one of those things that like people do already. So it'd be great to have a service that just kind of amalgamates process, makes it a little bit easier, makes it a bit more accessible for people. Because like learning guitar is something I've wanted to do for a while, but you know, how do you find someone who teaches guitar?
Right.
So if you could have something like that,
I think guitar broadens the business model as well, because you can bring a guitar with you in your car. So you can serve people that don't have a guitar and do have a guitar.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's perfect. It's a lot more portable to bring a guitar than a piano.
Yeah.
I've also been seeing stuff like video game lessons. So like experts with certain video games. Like I know it was a big thing to have like Fortnite tutors. you kid, like actual
that's just not
actual
my style.
People paying for Fortnite tutoring. And yeah, no, having like even an app like that where you could have tutors, you know, skilled in a certain game come over, like hell, you might even be able to incorporate it into like a babysitting service for some people or like a childcare service, you know, bring someone over, teach your kid how to play games. I don't know. It sounds dumb, but you could do it. So we are just going to take a quick little break, and then we're going to be getting into our next segment here. So we'll see you in a couple minutes. I'm back. I hope you enjoyed that little smooth jazz intermission. I know I do. But we are back now, and we are talking climate change. So why don't we get into the next story? If you're just tuning in, this is Aaron Gare, and this is the RL News Show, and we are your very relaxed hosts for the evening. We're going to be talking youth advocacy, though. This coming Friday, between 12:30 and 2 p.m., climate advocacy groups in Kitchener-Waterloo will be hosting a Fridays for Future climate strike event at Waterloo City Hall with the goal of engaging youth advocacy against climate change. Now, climate change has been a huge issue if you've been paying attention to news at all. And this one is going to be hosted by a number of groups, including KW Climate Save, Rise Waterloo Region, Divest Waterloo Region, and Citizens Climate Lobby Waterloo Region. And the strike hopes to achieve a more unified and amplified voice for younger people who might want to speak out and demand change from the governments. Now, these people were inspired by the recent acts of one Greta Thunberg, who is a 16-year-old Swedish climate activist who, between August and November of 2018, became a rather prominent figurehead in the youth advocacy movement for climate change awareness. So for one Friday a month since the beginning of this school year, Thunberg has been sitting in front of the Swedish parliament to make politicians take accountability for their apparent inaction towards climate change. Now, these local organizations and nonprofits have been very dedicated to mirroring her efforts by coordinating these strike events, and they're hoping to have them, from my understanding, relatively consistently, so like every other Friday or one Friday a month, basically just enough that really gets the word out, and they're really, really hoping to inspire young people around them to join. Activists like Megan Rutten, who is from Rise Waterloo, see a lot of missed opportunities and failures from people in her generation, you know, a lot of people coming into power, not really doing anything, just kind of shoving the issue often in the next person, and something that we've seen a lot. But she sees our generation as a chance to improve that, not only improving our world for future generations, but improve the conversation about climate change as a whole. So similarly to what is being seen in Sweden right now, this anger in specific is directed largely at Canadian government and media organizations, because they see them as not taking a serious or aggressive enough approach to combating or informing the public about these environmental issues that they see as crucial. So Mo Markham, who is another activist from KW Climate Save, sees the potential power in a collective and organized stand against climate change, and she wants to see that very much directed at younger people. So she sees young people especially in the forefront of educating others, and she sees them really with the power to influence people around them and make them pay a lot greater attention to how severe these issues are. They believe that young people as a whole speaking up in large enough numbers will make governments really stand up and pay attention. They really hope that with events like these that more young people come and try and educate themselves so that they can educate others. And for some students, these events really offer an opportunity to demonstrate the severity of, you know, their conviction about climate change and the belief that a united platform, you know, should be taken more seriously. And the question is begged by an event like this. People often really infantilize youth. You know, they put them in a position where they are seen as being less educated or less mature or foolish. How do young people, especially students, get themselves taken seriously in the modern era? Is it a problem that has been changing at all in the past little bit, do you think?
It definitely is a problem, and I don't know if I see that it is changing. It's a lot to do with just our culture and our society, where power is drawn to the top, where it's your wisdom in years and it's your education as well as your power in industry and money, and then you become the decision maker that influences our entire culture. So that's just how we've always been, and it's hard for a young person to feel or to seem valid because they haven't proven themselves in any other arena.
For sure. I mean, but I don't think it's impossible for young people, especially kids, to be taken seriously. I think it takes dramatic events that really spur people's interest, like with the issues with school shootings in the U.S. There's been a significant outcry from youth activists about you know, gun violence and changing or modifying the current gun laws. And I think, it unfortunate as it is, it takes those situations where you have like a large number of people getting together and having that collective voice. Other examples I can think of, Nolan Gould, who is in Modern Family, if you watch all, he's the kid. He is a Mensa member. So he was real young when he joined Mensa. I think he was like 12. So I think it's possible, but it takes pretty extraordinary circumstances.
I think it's fairly fickle. I mean, the events of the school shootings that are throughout America predominantly, compared to the campaign of Starbucks for getting straws or getting rid of straws, how quickly that's happened versus how long it's taken, how much outcry from the public there has been about school shootings, and nothing politically strong has been done yet. So it's really about social change. It's about everybody's perceptions, like the perception of a young person being uneducated and therefore invalid. That perception is kind of wrong, and that's how we need to change. If there's going to be change, we have to change altogether as a society, and it's a social decision to see, to question who we think has authority and why they have authority.
For sure. And when it comes to like young people advocating for something they feel strongly about, like honestly, more power to them. When I was in like high school and middle school, and I know that's the age when there's like a lot of these kids who are starting to get really passionate about things, like good on them for caring about something so much that they want to demand some sort of change. Because I know when I was that young, I did not care about anything else. And maybe that's just me. Maybe I was just a selfish child, but
I think that is proving their authenticity because they, I remember being that age too. And I think the girl in Sweden is 16-year-old. You're not really thinking about like your extracurriculars and trying to do this to impress some employer later on. You're really doing it out of your own passion, especially for doing it however long she has been doing it. Over and over again, going out there and sitting in front of the government building, and that's purely out of passion. And I think that should have some consideration for validity and authority. We should think about somebody that is that passionate and think about their position a lot more closely.
Of course. No, I definitely agree. Now, speaking to climate change more broadly, at the recent journalism conference in Calgary, Nash, that we went to, you attended a session on climate change research. How did that go?
Mm-hmm. That was a very interesting session. It was with, I don't even know his name right now. Evaded me, but
I'm gonna find it.
He's a prominent writer in for New York Times, and then he's also written for Time Magazine. And he found that his reporting of climate change has changed. It started as a science and a lot of scientific language about the changing in temperatures and the biodiversity and water temperature, all that kind of thing. And now he's seeing in 2018 that it's more of a social study. It's a more of a social and humanities focused topic, because climate change is a part of our daily lives and everybody's daily lives. He talked about a very interesting example of, I think it was Copenhagen, Denmark, and then an island off of Denmark, and just the huge changes that Denmark as a country started, and how it took the government to do census and to ask the population's opinion on changes, and it took like a societal shift in how they thought about their daily lives and looking for more renewable and more efficient ways to live. I thought that was really interesting, that it's not just a science. It's not just something that's happening to the environment that scientists are going to fix. It's something that's happening to us every day. So plastic straws and banning that is kind of a silly example, but reusable plastic water bottles and getting rid of disposable water bottles has a huge thing. That's been a bigger shift throughout the globe.
Mm-hmm. Was it Chris Turner?
I think that's it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. He was the climate speaker at the conference. And obviously we're going to be talking a little bit more about that, but we're going to be moving on now, and we're going to be talking about Eileen Mercier. If you do not know who Ms. Mercier is, she is Laurier's chancellor, and she was recently inducted into the Women's Executive Network Top 100 Hall of Fame after being recognized with the recognition as one of Canada's 100 most powerful women for the fourth time now in her career. So she's like a powerful woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like top 100. I wonder if that's in the world or if that's just in North America.
I think that would be North America.
North America. Imagine being like one of the top 100 most powerful people in the world, though. That would be pretty impressive.
Very.
But I mean, even if it is just in Canada or North America, being top 100 most powerful person, that's like... That's a great honor. So a little bit about Mercier. She actually graduated from Laurier as well with a BA, and she also got an academic gold medal. There are now 150 WXN Hall of Fame inductees, which have been bestowed by the organization throughout the last 16 years, and the Top 100 Awards has honored over 1,115 Canadian professional women, which does include their top 100 regional celebrations in Montreal, Vancouver, Halifax, and Calgary. Now, Mercier was presented with this award at the WXN Gala in Toronto last month, which, my apologies, recognizes women who have demonstrated great leadership in their professional careers and who serve as titans of diversity. Now, Mercier was nominated and chosen in the Corporate Directors category. It is considered the final stage in her now 48-year-long career. She was unanimously appointed into her position as Laurier's ninth chancellor in 2016, and currently she is the chair of Payments Canada, which is responsible for Canada's national payment system, and is a board member of Intact Financial, as well as the Royal Conservatory of Music. Her past positions include chair of the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan Board, founder and president of Finvoy Management Incorporated, and senior vice president and chief financial officer of Abitibi Price. In 2011, during Laurier's centennial, Mercier was named one of the university's 100 alumni of achievement. Mercier has achieved the recognition as one of Canada's top 100 most powerful women in 2012, 2015, and 2017 as well. So she's like a consistently very powerful woman. being nominated for a fourth time, however, made her eligible for the recommendation of actually being inducted into WXN's Hall of Fame by the Diversity Champions Committee. Her best advice, you know, for the young folk who might want to become a powerful person like her, when confronted with something new and challenging, is to always say yes, which I think, you know, is very good. It's also, WXM is also a member-based organization, which not only hosts the top 100 awards, but also provides mentoring, training, networking, and programs for women. So congratulations to Miss Eileen Mercier. Very good for her. I mean, obviously, she earned it in her 48-year-long career.
Mm-hmm. I like what the article says here, that she's the chair of Payments Canada, which is responsible for Canada's national payments system. Very powerful woman indeed, because Canadian banks are the backbone of our country.
Heck yeah. we are going to be moving on real briefly before we go to our break, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the Cord. At NASH this past weekend, the Cord sports editor, Pranav Desai, that's how you say his last name, right?
Yeah.
Desai? Okay. He won the JHM Sports Reporting Award at NASH, which is an annual journalism conference. For the story, Laurier graduate Jessica Platt comes out as first openly transgender player in the CWHI. So NASH 81, which was held in Calgary this year, was organized by some members of the Gauntlet, U Calgary's independent student publication. It is, if you do not know, it is the annual gathering of Canada's student journalists held, and it was held between January 3rd and 6th. NASH celebrated and continued the 80-plus year tradition of the Canadian University Press, also called CUP. CUP is the collection of basically student journalists across Canada. and every year for NASH, the John H. MacDonald Awards for Excellence in Student Journalism, better known as the Johnnies or the JHMs, are presented as part of NASH. These are prestigious awards which recognize the very best in student journalism across the country. And this year, the Canadian University Press organized the JHM Awards and nominations. So Desai was shortlisted for the award on December 25th of last year, but his story was published in January, January 24th as well. And it is now his second year as sports editor. He began his career at the Cord between 2016 to 2017 as the lead sports reporter. This was both his first nomination and his first win at the JHM Awards. So well done, Pranav.
I'm not sure if he broke this story, but I do know that after he wrote it, it was picked up by the Globe and Mail, and it was a national conversation. So that was very, very cool to see that he published it here with the Cord, and then it became a bigger conversation afterwards.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And then just talking a little bit about how NASH was, because we had a fantastic time. NASH is really a very wonderful event. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they do it, but they get a lot of influential journalists and people to come to the events. And I think it's a really great thing, despite how difficult it must be to get together for the people from Canadian University Press.
Well, so many professionals in a university publication themselves, and so it's a moment for them to give back, and then it also feel like a bit of a superstar because we all clap for you and we're all excited to see you. So
for sure. Yeah, they get to be little celebrities, which I'm sure is great. It's just a 3 days of butt kissing. But I think one of my highlights from NASH was actually the keynote speaker on January 5th, Suzanne Craig, who is an investigative reporter at the New York Times. She broke the Donald Trump tax return story.
And the presidential fraud.
She gave a wonderful, professional, humble speech about how she started student journalism at the Gauntlet, which was the paper that hosted NASH this year. And it was just such an inspiring but very humble story about basically how she climbed to the top. So it was so wonderful, and she was such a great speaker. It really made my first Nash experience like fantastic. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How did you find Nash this year?
I really enjoyed it as well. Mm. There's always been like one or two sessions at each Nash that really stand out for me.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed last year's. There was a 360 video seminar.
Ooh.
And that's and how they were using that for changing the conversation about different the ways they talk about the city and the way they talk about events and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was very cool. And I think this one there was a little bit more about that as well. I think it was actually with climate change and 360 video where you could see new patterns just because they stuck a 360 camera to the side of an airplane and then they flew over Antarctica to
do
research.
Cool. That's
really
cool.
Yeah, it was
really
very,
cool.
very interesting. So just cutting edge stuff like that you don't hear about and then all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere. So Cup and Nash can be a bit of a forefront of journalism, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Are you interested in investigative journalism? Is that kind of inspiring for you?
It's so inspiring. Mm-hmm. It's so cool. It's like the thought of being like a detective, but without like the threat of being shot if you're like a cop.
The safe detective.
But it like, yeah, it combines like being a cop doing investigative work with like writing, which is a lot safer. But I love the idea of like snooping around and finding clues and finding like a little breadcrumb.
What about the
finding that trail?
Strange conversations she had with Donald Trump and some of the threats and like could you
That's
take all
so
that
so cool though. Like the fact that she just calls up Donald Trump once in a while and like he gets mad at her. I don't know why, but like that's so exciting. It's so exciting to think about. They just have chats on the phone. Imagine being a New York Times journalist and you just get to talk to people like
where
that.
Where she had a conversation with him on the phone and then she showed us the tweet right after where he called the New York Times fake news and the things that she was doing was fake. I think the conversation just before that tweet went public on the phone with her, he said, "This is all a game."
Yeah.
And then he made that tweet. And so, like, it just sort of connected dots for me why he's so crazy, because this is just a game to him.
Yeah, Donald Trump's playing that three-dimensional chess game.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's wild. It added such a great dimension to journalism. And it's just so cool. I love Nash, and I really hope I get the chance to attend it next year. Speaking a little bit to, like, the JHMs as well before we leave, like, the nominations this year were wild. The UBC, which is the University of British Columbia's independent student newspaper, they got so many nominations. And I believe one of their news reporters or news editors, Zach Viscara, got 2 wins just by himself. So,
and that may be changing, actually, in the near future. I was sitting in for the plenary for Canadian University Press, and the person who is nominated for president of CUP this year is hinted at there being a different structure so that smaller publications have a better chance against these massive publications like the UBC.
Because
there is good work being done at different levels.
Yes.
And you can't really compare a small publication like the GRIF from Edmonton and the UBC.
Yeah.
It's just different qualities of budgets and whatnot.
No, for sure. Yeah, no, like these student journalism places, like they do good work. Mm-hmm. So I think giving them more of an equal chance to win would be very good for them.
Yep.
But really great work to the UBC. They're all such wonderful people. So 100% they definitely deserve the wins that they got this year. We're going to be moving on now. We're going to have a chance to discuss a little bit the Best of Laurier 2018. So I'm just going to read off the first place and second place nominations for everything, and then we can have a little chat about it. So best first year residence is KSR. The second place was Willison. The best orientation activity was headphone disco, and the second place was the cheer off. Best place to make new friends, clubs. I mean, you ask a bunch of university age students, best place to make friends, I feel like clubs is going to be everyone's answer. And then second place is talking to people in class.
Can I clarify? Was that clubs like nightclubs, or is that clubs like clubs and associations?
Oh, that's a great clarification. I'm going to assume clubs and associations.
I think
I don't know why my mind went to nightclubs.
Laurier Recreation retweeted our article, so I think they think of that too.
It's probably clubs and associations. That makes more sense. Okay. I mean, I think our answer would probably be, you know, join the Corps.
Join the Corps.
Join WLUSIP, join Radio Laurier, you know? We'll give you friends. If you're lonely, come hang out with us. We also don't have friends.
We've got lots.
Yeah, we've got lots of friends. Best place to poop in private? You know, I'm loving these questions, by the way. These are great.
I'm not happy about this one because that was my go-to. But go ahead.
The Daub upper floors. I do have to agree. The Daub upper floors, they're always like dead.
The dean's up there. Nobody's going to go poop.
Nobody's going to go poop where the dean is.
Except
no.
Now.
Second place, obviously, is Last Hole, which makes a lot of sense because it's a big place.
It's a nice new building.
It is. I'm sure they got great bathrooms over there. Best place for a date in Waterloo is Famoso, and second place was Waterloo Park. I love Famoso. Mm-hmm. Famoso's great.
Great.
It has reasonably priced, high quality food. Yeah. So like,
that's a good impression you can leave with a first date.
Mess me up with a date at Famoso for sure. Do you have any other like good date spots in Waterloo?
I really like the coffee shops. There's a bunch of coffee shops.
Oh,
around.
Coffee shops are so good. Yeah, there's a lot
Princess
of
Princess Cinema coffee shop is a nice spot.
Princess Cafe. Hit me up. I love it. Yeah,
they have
no.
Great artwork and like you can do.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, just kind of stare at that if the conversation's not flowing.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have great coffee.
They have great food too. Mm-hmm. And they got the cinnamon right next to it. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm. I love the Princess. Shout out to the Princess. You guys do great work. So.
Did you get to the second place there? After
second
Famoso?
Place. Yeah, Waterloo Park. Waterloo Park's a great place for a date. 100%. Like you go to the petting zoo where the animals are. Mm-hmm. I mean, not so much in the winter because they're all gone now. But when the snow melts and the animals are out, oh, it's so great. Mm-hmm. It's like it's instant conversation right there.
And it's a busy happening it's thing. Busy, like you can see some.
You can just walk around.
Yeah, a baseball game, a cricket match going on.
It's wonderful. Waterloo Park's a great place for a date. Best food service employee was the library second cup employees. And I have to agree. Like if I think of who just hits it out of the park every time I'm there, the ladies and the man bun guy at Second Cup, oh, they do such a great job. They're always so nice. They feel like they're part of my family, and I love them.
They take pride in their
work. They do, and it shows. And then second place is Linda.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what Linda means. But, I mean, Linda, if you're out there, a lot of students at Laurier love you. So,
you know, I bet
well
it's
done.
A specific employee at the meal service place for the first years.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guarantee that's
serves a little extra it. Of whatever they like.
Yeah. Best student bar is Dallas. Made me make sense. People love the bull.
I haven't been yet.
I have not been. We got to ride the bull, Garrison. Mm-hmm. And then second place is Pub on King, which I think is fair. Pub on King is very cheap. You know, good quality food.
Especially wine nights.
Wine nights. Perfect for students. They do trivia there, too. So, I mean, definitely a good student bar. Best food on campus, Wolf's Pub. I can represent Wolf's Pubs because I also work at Wolf's Pub. They make good food. Oh, it's good pub food. Second place is Union Market. Have you been to Union Market at all?
Just in and out several times. Not really. I don't think it's my favorite. I think it'd be Wilf's and then I think that's the Williams is right beside. Or maybe the Mr. Sub. That whole cafeteria. Like, Union Market isn't super special to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no. On campus, I'd probably go.
Or the Smokes.
Is that considered on campus?
Is that not on campus?
I guess. Maybe.
Grab food on campus. Because there's like a Burger King, Mr. Sub, the Pizza, and the Smokes. I actually haven't been up there in a while, but I like that area.
Yeah. No, I like that area too. I like most of the spots in that place. Favorite social media account, and obviously it's like Laurier related. So obviously Spotted at Laurier won, because I can't think of anyone who doesn't follow Spotted at Laurier. And then the second place is the One Card account.
How did that beat us?
I don't know.
Well, it was hip.
How is One Card that exciting? Go away. best place to study on campus, obviously, library. And the second place is the 2-4 Lounge. Makes sense. There's always so many people there. The toughest courses, I feel like this is a bit biased. Like, they're both first-year classes. You know that's just a lot of salty people. But to be fair, I have heard so many bad things about BU 111.
Yeah, it is. I think it's in addition to being first year. That's why.
Yeah.
You're in a crazy transition of life, and then you also have to handle this. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
This is like a 200, 300 level course, I think.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Okay. I bet there was a lot of like 100-year courses that were nominated, though. But BU 111, definitely tough. And then second place, MA 122. I don't know what that is. I would assume math, something math related. Best place to get books, you know, Facebook, second place, Amazon, standard. I mean, getting books other than the bookstore. I also like Wordsworth books in Uptown. Mm-hmm. They usually have a lot of cheaper options for a lot of books if you're like
that is all narrative books and
yeah, if you're in like an English or history course. I mean non-textbook related because they don't have textbooks. Best extracurricular activities, intramural sports, obviously one. Second place is ice breaking. I think ice breaking. Good extracurricular activity. We would recommend the cord, you know. WLUSIP is a good extracurricular activity. It's wonderful. Again, we can find friends. best place to find parking, nowhere. Number one vote, love it. And then second place is Bricker Ave. And I think most people would agree with the winner of finding parking. It's definitely not enough parking here. We got to go back to those blueprints, see what we can find. See what we can find. Best professor, Bina Mehta. The court actually wrote a story on her a little while ago. I don't know who Bina is, but she's great. She's just wonderful. All the things I hear about her are good. And then second place is Louise Daw. Best food off campus is Meltwich. And second place is Lassie's. Have you ever been to Meltwich?
I haven't.
I don't know if I agree with Meltwich. I also haven't been to Meltwich. But I look in. I don't know. I don't know if I'd go there. I'm more of a freshy guy.
I think I need to break out of my routine a little bit and try a couple more places.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. I must also do that. I don't like change either.
Yep.
And then the best classroom space on campus is Dob 101.
And I don't get that.
Same place as last hall. I don't get it either. Dob 101? Why is that the best classroom space?
Is it because of the rolly chairs? You get your own desk, a rolly chair, and a little thing underneath your seat for your bag.
Oh.
And it's kind of like you're in like a flying saucer disc.
Maybe,
thing.
Yeah.
I'm like more of a fan of structure, car. Though. I don't I, like
we know.
The...
Yeah. You like your structure, your organization. So that was the best of Laureate 2018. So yeah, I agree with some of those. I think for the orientation activity, headphone disco, for sure. That looks so fun. Mm-hmm. I wish I had done it. That sounds great. But you know, most of these, I agree with. So we're going to be moving on. And we're going to be talking about SAD, seasonal depression, how to understand it, how to deal with it. So if you have begun to feel uncontrollably and unexplainably sad as the days become shorter, the darkness arrives earlier, and the weather becomes colder and more unforgiving, then you may be one of the unfortunate few who suffers from seasonal depression. Also called seasonal affective disorder, literally SAD is the acronym. Seasonal depression is a specific type of mood disorder that is most related to the changing of the seasons and more distinctly occurs during the winter months. This often leaves people feeling moody, sluggish, or excessively irritable. They lose interest in things they enjoy and have low energy. It causes under and or oversleeping, and a lack of concentration leads to changes in weight, either increase or decrease in appetite. And most dangerously, it leads to having more frequent thoughts regarding death or suicide. So like seasonal affective disorder, not to be messed with. It is not yet entirely explained by science, but it has been linked to a number of factors, including the amount of sunlight that people receive on a daily basis. So vitamin D deficiency has been known to be linked with symptoms of chronic depression or be worsened. This change is also worsened by a shift in people's biological clocks, so their circadian rhythms, which is interrupted and confused by the shift in hours of sunlight. So circadian rhythms are dominated by physical and environmental cues, such as the rising and the falling of the sun, you know, which naturally helps us determine when we should rise and wake. So when the body becomes used to your average of 12 hours of sunlight during the summer or whatever, the shift to roughly 8 hours during the winter means that your body has to adapt to a new shorter rhythm, which can often lead to these symptoms of depression because your body's getting less vitamin D, as well a drop in your serotonin and melatonin levels because of this. Adds that extra level. So the lack of sunlight really impacts your sleep patterns, really affects your moods, helps. It really triggers the seasonal depression. But because of this onset, seasonal depression should be taken very seriously. It tends to affect 2-3% of the general population annually. But 13-17% of people who experience symptoms of seasonal depression tend to have a family member with the disorder, so there might also be a genetic component to it. Moreover, seasonal affective disorder is often diagnosed higher in women disproportionately than in men, and disproportionately more so in younger as opposed to older adults. So people our age, we get pretty sad during the winter, clearly. It's considered a specifier of overarching major depression symptoms as well, which means that if you currently suffer from chronic depression, you're more likely to experience symptoms of seasonal affective disorder. Now, thankfully, there are a few treatments for seasonal affective disorder that I don't know if they're proven to work, but it's suggested to help, including light therapy. I think that literally just means going out and getting as much sun as you can. Exercise therapy, so I know exercise is supposed to help with symptoms of depression as well. Medications and psychotherapy, so talking to a mental health professional. But please don't listen to us. We don't know anything. Never pursue any of these without first consulting your local physician or mental health professional, such as a psychiatrist. So just talking about seasonal affective disorder, do you ever experience it at all? Ever feel sad when the winter hits?
I don't think so. Not in a clinical perspective. I do get very miserable. It was interesting when we were in Calgary. I noticed how immensely my mood changed when it was a very warm evening. Walking about felt so much more comfortable.
That's true.
I don't know if that fits. I think it's just I don't like it when I'm cold.
That's fair. No, I think that, you know, that's probably a contributing factor as well. Nobody likes those feelings. But like, let's talk about the acronym seasonal affective disorder, SAD. You gotta know that that was intentional.
I think they work the words around it. They have to.
Like, if the scientist researching that, you're like, I'm gonna mess with them. Yes. I'm gonna do this. And like, I know that has to be the case because I know another example. There is a term for uncontrollable sneezing, and it's called autosomal dominant compelling heliophthalmic outburst syndrome.
I don't know what that's spelled, but what is
the acronym is ACHU. So you know the people.
Somebody was present.
Somebody was very present. They were like, I want it to spell ACHU. It's an uncontrollable sneeze, the term for it. It has to be ACHU. Mm-hmm. So you know the people that made SAD. My apologies. I think I'm also getting sick. You know the people did that intentionally. We're going to be moving on to our final story of the evening. The Golden Hawks cheerleading team becomes 9-time champions. So on December 5th, the Laurier Golden Hawks cheerleading team won the 9th national championship in their program's history. Their last title came in 2016. And after a third place finish this year, the Purple and Gold were looking to stake their claim at the top once more. So after losing last year, they added in more workouts, more training. They knew they had to work a lot harder overall than last year to make sure they won back the first place title, because it's getting to the point now where like it's almost assumed. They began their training in the summer, and they ended the season usually around February and March, and then by May they began training again. So cheerleading for Laurier, like it's a year-long process, a big commitment. They also have a lot of team bonding activities and practice twice a week, so it really helped them strengthen and respond as a team this year. But the 2018 title is perhaps the most impressive accomplishment for the Hawks in team history, as Laurier was part of the biggest division this year, which is the all-girl division, consisting of 10 teams. Now, there is a big emphasis on the cheerleading program at Laurier Athletics, and the 9 national championships, I think, are a direct result of a lot of hard work that the Golden Hawk cheerleaders have been putting into perfecting their craft each year. Now, even though there is a perception among many sports fans that cheerleading only involves cheering on other sports teams, there is a lot more that goes on behind the scenes, but the work that the cheerleaders have put in, you know, clearly has been paying off big time. So a 9th national title in the span of 11 years has, I mean, obviously elevated the cheerleading program to one of the best in Canada. And this begs the question, I had no idea we had such a good cheerleading team. Did you?
I did, yeah.
Really?
Because I remember hearing about them, I think in another year, 2016, maybe they had another really good year. And I heard about it then as well. Be very interesting if it wasn't an all-girls team.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool, too, because I know they can do different things.
What if they had co-ed? Would you join?
I would, absolutely. Yeah? I'm waiting for auditions.
Yeah. I was always really big into, like, gymnastics when I was younger, like bendy stuff. So I don't know why I never tried cheerleading. I'd be a male cheerleader. We'd be good.
We'd be good.
We'll lead the charge.
We'll start this, yeah. We'll go pick up some really big gym guys, and we'll go be male cheerleaders.
Yep. Yep, we're gonna be 10-time champions.
Yep.
Take on Western. Unfortunately, though, it is almost the top of the hour, and that will take us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for all of you who tuned in to listen. If you've got any comments, questions, or concerns, if you like us, if you hate us, if you got anything at all that you want to say, if you want to get involved with the news team, you can find us on Twitter or Facebook, Radio Laurier Twitter or Facebook. Thank you so much to the staff and the volunteers at Radio Laurier and Wolusip for helping to make this program possible. Our music, both the intro and the outro today, is provided by Steve Dave for Life. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week in Laurier, and make sure we will see you next week because we are going to be discussing the Students' Union elections. How are you feeling about those, by the way, Gerson? You excited?
I think so. I think we're going to need a lot more student input, more than 20% of the population this time.
Yeah, right? 20%.
Everybody out there, vote,
come
please.
Come on, guys. I mean, I know it's easy to say, like, you know, why does it matter? But 22%, that's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's half as, I mean, I know the provincial federal elections are not much better. It's like 40% or so, but come on. We can do better than 20%.
I think you, as students, would be very surprised by the candidates that we have.
I bet.
Some of them are very interesting and not exactly viable. So please go out there and look and see who they are.
Take the time, you know.
Don't just randomly
look
at
their platforms. Don't just say, hey, this guy looks good.
Go see what Waterloo Open Forum and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, please do. Also, in the interest of letting you people know, myself and Garrison are also running in the election for Wilfrid Laurier Student Publication President. So if you guys are interested in finding out what we're doing, if you're interested in Wolusip at all and you want to find out the direction that it might be taking next year, make sure that you come to Open Forum next Wednesday between 5 and 7 in the concourse, because that's when all that's going to be taking place. So until then, see you next time. And up next is the Branford Wrap-Up. So have a good weekend, Laurier. We will see you later.